Let's open our Bibles back up to John 18, and this morning we'll be looking at verses 18:28 to 19:16. And before we get started, heads up that the next 2 weeks we will be gone on vacation, so you all will get the joy and blessing of hearing first Stephen preaching on Colossians 3, first few verses, and encouraging us to fix our eyes on Christ and the things above, where He is, that'll be a wonderful kind of application, I think. I don't know if you intended that, but for what we're talking about here in John. And then after that, Kevin will be preaching on what do you do when you find yourself angry at God? And obviously that's not something that's okay, like the world says, you know. So Kevin will be talking about that, and what do we do from a biblical perspective when you find yourself feeling that way toward our blessed God. So, and I look forward to hearing those myself on the recordings, so I look forward to it, and I hope you do too. So John 18, and we'll start in verse 28. As I've said before, Jesus' kingdom to us, His kingdom principles, seem to be upside down. You know, the world thinks this way, and unfortunately we a lot of times think this way, where the greatest among us, even in the church, and I mean, you know, the larger church, the body of Christ, is the person who's famous. You know, whatever they might be, a singer, a writer, songwriter, an author, a preacher, a women's Bible study teacher, counselor, those kind of, we tend to think, oh, those are the ones who are great. That isn't how Jesus' kingdom works. Instead, the one who is greatest in His kingdom is the aged, infirm saint, for example, who only has the strength to pray, but pray she does. It belongs to the person who thinks they only have little gifts. They look at others and I don't do what they do. Nobody even sees what I do. And yet their faithfulness uplifts many. It belongs not to those who accomplish great things for God, but to those who do what things they can for their great God. That's how Jesus' kingdom works. You know, shortly before where we find ourselves here in the story, just within the last hour or two, Jesus' disciples, of all things, were talking about which one of them was the greatest. You know, they still had not gotten it. And now, the one who really is the greatest among them, the greatest among all, is going to be treated as nothing. What a shock it's going to be to their system. But their system needed to be reset so that they would learn to think in His ways rather than the ways they had grown up with. They needed to see that His suffering, death, and the dawn of resurrection morning hold the key to understanding His kingdom. And as we go through this lesson this morning, I hope that we will all see how these things are true, how we will see through His suffering, how what I'm saying about His kingdom, what Jesus has said about His kingdom, how that is true. This is where we're going today. As Jesus sinks lower and lower in the minds of men, let us see that in that humiliation that He is exalted higher and higher. Remember, think about it, okay? As I've said before, if Jesus' kingdom, His principles to us seem upside down, But really, they are what? Right side up. Okay, so if what looks like to us, to the people of his day, going this direction, if you turn that over, it's really this, right? That is what we're trying to get at. That's what we need to see here today in this lesson. And my prayer is that the dawn will shine in our hearts so that we see in the depth of Jesus' humiliation the height of His majesty. To not look upon Him with pity. To not look upon Him, as we talked about in Sunday school, some brought out how, you know, some churches, the way that they have things is like, you know, oh, it's just horrible, you know, the Friday of you know, His death and all that. You know, it's just a mournful time and everything. No. We need to see in that the height of His majesty. We need to see in it how He is exalted. John shows us that the character of heaven's King is not to prance around in arrogant pride, but to suffer for those He loves. John displays for us three evidences of how the unbelieving world thinks about Jesus, how they thought then and how they think about Him today. It isn't any different. And without faith, you can't do any better. I can't do any better without faith. But if you have trusted in Christ, I encourage you to see His true and majestic character in these examples of His humiliation. I guess what I'm saying is this. His humiliation is His exaltation. Now, yes, there's a day when every knee shall bow and every tongue will confess that He is the Lord. That day is not today. That day is not back in 33 AD. It was not then. In His humiliation, He was exalted. Last week we saw how Jesus is the only one in whom we must trust. Today we must remember that the account is not about the religious leaders who rejected Him. It's not about the Gentiles, the Romans, who tortured Him and killed Him. It's not even about Pilate, although he's a prominent character in the various scenes we're going to look at this morning. It is about displaying the majesty of Jesus Christ through His humiliation. We're going to still see, as we saw last time, that Jesus is in control. It's amazing that He could go through what He went through, weakened so much that we're going to talk about by the beating He received, and He's still in control. It shouldn't surprise us, those of us who have faith and we understand the truth, because He's the Lord. And we're going to see that. We're going to see a greater display of what I've called right-side-up thinking that looks to us upside down. Jesus is going to be presented by the Romans as this pathetic, comical king. And yet, if we have eyes to see, we will see His glory, we'll see His beauty, we will see His majesty. He's contrasted here in this section with Pilate, a man who, because, you know, I'm the ruler of Judea. And he prances around in arrogant pride, toying with the Jews and using Jesus to do it. But Jesus is contrasted with that. He's contrasted with Pilate, a ruler who struts himself about and torments his enemies. Jesus, though, remains humble so that He might save His enemies. Oh, what a difference. And so first, Jesus the Messiah is despised by unbelieving Jews. We talked about that a lot last time, and then that leads us into our discussion this time, because they gave Him to the Gentiles. They handed Him over to the Gentiles. He's despised by unbelieving Jews. Look at verse 28. They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas, the high priest, into the praetorium, the headquarters for Pilate, and it was early. And they themselves, the Jews, did not enter into the praetorium in order that they might not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. Pilate, therefore, went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would have not delivered him up to you. In other words, just trust us. Pilate therefore said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said to him, we're not permitted to put anyone to death. At the word of Jesus, this is John's explaining here in verse 32 why 31 was true, why it happened. It was so that the word of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. So the Jewish leaders, they're bringing Jesus to Pilate, and handing him over to Pilate. And they won't actually enter into his house. Because for a Jew to enter into a Gentile's house, they would be defiled. And then they would be defiled probably for 7 days. And they wouldn't be able to enjoy any of the feasts, participate in any of the feasts. You have Passover, which starts, and then that kicks off the Feast of Unleavened Bread a whole week. They'd miss the whole thing. So they could go into the courtyard, and that's what they did. It's ironic that the Jews are so concerned about ceremonial purity and not being defiled while they're plotting murder. And you're going to see, I'll bring out a few things, but John's gospel, and particularly in this section, is dripping with irony. Yeah, it's just amazing. There was certainly no love lost between Pilate and the Jewish leaders. They despised one another. Pilate was harsh. He's probably a weak man, and the way, you know, you overcome weakness is, you know, you stretch yourself around and you just be hard on people. And that's what he did. And they hated him. They hated being ruled by a Gentile. But, you know, they were not that pleasant themselves, as we already saw last time. And if you just read in the ministry of Jesus, the religious leaders are not a nice bunch of guys. And so, as I said, Pilate, you know, he's like, okay, these guys are a thorn in my side. I'm going to do everything I can to get them back for all this and just make life miserable for them. And I can tell they really want this Jesus dead. And I don't know what's going on. But I'm going to just, you know, get these little digs in, you know, every chance I get. And we're going to see he's going to do it a lot here. And so, you know, he's like, okay, well, let's open up a new trial. No, whoa, you know, no. And they're mad at Pilate. No, we don't need to open a new trial. We've already, you know, had the trial. We found him guilty. Just trust us. Take our word for it. And just kill him. And Pilate's like, okay, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law then. If this is all your deal, go. And you see, Pilate is like, I'm in charge here, guys. And here's a, you know, arrogance prancing around. I'm in charge. You play by my rules or you can just leave. But both sides are being used by God to accomplish God's purposes. And it's amazing just to see the sovereign hand of God at work in using the sin that both sides were prone to accomplish what God wanted to do in lifting up his son and to die in our place. And John points out here that the reason why Jesus had to be delivered to the Romans was so that he would die a certain way, so that he would be crucified, so that he would be lifted up. A couple things about that. See, Jesus said back in 12:32, and John here again speaks of Jesus' words on the same level as Old Testament scriptures. They were fulfilled because his words, well, the Old Testament are his words. But as you're coming to this and you're saying, wow, okay, Jesus' words are on par with the Old Testament. And, you know, as you're learning, this is like, wow, you know. And then you come to understand that he is the word. So back in 12:32, Jesus had prophesied about how he would die, that he would be lifted up. We know that from a number of passages that Jesus had to be lifted up like the serpent in the wilderness. You remember that bronze serpent back in the days of Moses, and you know, the people were grumbling and everything. God sent snakes out to bite them, you know, and And so they're dying. I mean, these are poisonous, extremely poisonous snakes. And so what God told Moses to do, okay, make a bronze serpent, put it up on a pole, and then anybody who will come and look at that will be healed. And, you know, there were people who were like, yeah, right, I'm going to look at a bronze serpent? I mean, no. And they wouldn't even do it. Wouldn't even try. Why? They didn't have faith. They didn't believe what God said. And so they died. But everyone who did, who looked up at that bronze serpent, they were healed. And so Jesus said, like that, I have to be lifted up so that you will look to me by faith in order to be healed of the penalty against you, the sin that you had incurred the wrath of God by. You needed to look to Jesus in order to have that, if you will, spiritual healing, to have him pay your penalty. We must look to him by faith to be saved. Another thing, you see, the Jews, the reason why God did not allow the Jews to kill Jesus, one reason, is because they normally executed by what method? Stoning. Stoning would break bones. And do you remember what the scriptures say about Jesus, the Passover lamb? He's the ultimate Passover lamb. What? No bone of his be broken. See, so it fulfills scripture. And so that's one of the reasons. There are a number of reasons why God had him delivered over to the Romans. You also think in terms of how Jesus is going to even allude to this, how God puts, he shows by this that all men are guilty of this. Not just the Jews. The Gentiles are guilty too. But Jesus as the ultimate Passover lamb, to be that, none of his bones could be broken. And they weren't. So we saw how Jesus was rejected by the Jews. Second, Jesus is considered irrelevant by unbelieving Gentiles. He's considered irrelevant by unbelieving Gentiles. Verses 33 to 40. Let's look at those. Pilate therefore entered again into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation, the chief priest, delivered you up to me. What have you done?" And Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting and that I might not be delivered up to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Pilate therefore said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I'm a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release someone for you at the Passover. Do you wish then that I release for you the king of the Jews?" Therefore they cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a robber. So Pilate goes back inside, and where the Jews wouldn't go, remember, so it was inside the building, and he had a private interview with Jesus. He wanted to figure out what's going on. You know, the Jews aren't being completely open with Pilate. They're just saying, "Take our word for it, you need to kill him." And he's like, "Something's going on here." And Matthew, I think it is, it tells us that, you know, Pilate knew that he could tell that they did this because of jealousy, and you know. But we also know from Luke 23:2 that the Jews had told Pilate that Jesus claimed to be Christ, a king. In other words, that's because Messiah was to be king of Israel. And so Pilate asks him, you know, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And the reason why Jesus asked him back, well, okay, did this idea come to you on your own, or did somebody else tell you that about me? What he's doing is he's trying to see, you know, Pilate, do you see me as a threat to Rome? Are you asking me that because you're concerned that, okay, if I'm claiming to be a king and you feel threatened that I'm going to, you know, cause an insurrection, you know, I'm going to get a bunch of people together, and we're going to try to overthrow Rome? Is that what you're thinking, or is it you're asking me just because the Jews told you that? And of course, you know, Pilate sarcastically, you know, am I a Jew? Like I would think that, you know. But he did admit that the idea came from the Jewish leaders, and so Jesus let him know, you know, I'm not planning on overthrowing Rome. In fact, if I was, don't you think I would have been raising an army? And I would have kept, you know, from being arrested by the Jews? Think about it. There's no military activity. The one glimpse of military activity when Peter pulled out his sword, I told him to put it away. And so what you have here is that Jesus is saying, I'm not a threat to you. I'm not trying to overthrow Rome. My kingdom is different. It's not of this world. It's not of this realm. And he uses a term that indicates this idea of a reign, but not territory. I'm not here to take over this world, at least not this time. And so he's trying to drive that home. And so to that, Pilate goes, oh, so you are a king. And Jesus affirmed it, but he said, but let me tell you, I was born and I came into this world with a purpose. And the purpose was to declare the truth. And all those who are of the truth, in other words, they've been born again by God, they hear my voice. And you go back to think about Jesus as the shepherd, and the good shepherd, his sheep actually hear his voice. And see, when Jesus is talking about witnessing to the truth, he's not talking about this abstract idea of truth that Pilate was familiar with, you know, that philosophers talk about, where they're just batting around trying to discover truth and define truth and things like that, an abstract idea. Jesus is talking theology. He's talking doctrine. I came to declare to you the truth about God and what he requires of men, and the truth of the gospel. That's what he means by truth. And he embodied that truth. That's why in John 14 he would say, I am the truth, personally. And so here he's talking about, yeah, you know, like other kings, I was born. But unlike every other king, I actually existed before being conceived in the womb. Before I was conceived in Mary's womb, I actually existed. I actually had a purpose, too. And, you know, we joke about none of us asked to come into this world, you know. We didn't exist before we came into this world. Jesus did, John 1. And he had a purpose. So before he entered Mary's womb, he had a purpose in mind. No other king ever had that. He's saying, I'm completely different. My kingdom is completely different here. So what did Pilate mean by what is truth? You know, was he implying that, well, you know, nobody can really answer that. And that's what philosophers tend to think. I mean, they all suggest things and they go back and forth. And, you know, if you read the history of philosophy, you get all these different ideas. And, you know, the new guy shoots the old guy down and then somebody comes along and shoots him down. You know, they never come to an answer, really. Or was he disgusted by something so abstract as truth, which isn't practical? You know, we don't know. John doesn't tell us what Pilate was thinking. But he doesn't wait for an answer. I mean, here, truth is staring him in the face. He's looking at the one who embodies truth, the one who said, I am the truth. Pilate's not interested in the truth. All he's interested in is, are you a threat to Rome or not? And when he realized that Jesus wasn't plotting to overthrow Rome, he didn't have a military that he was raising up. For Pilate, the interview was over. Jesus is no revolutionary. That's all he needs to know. So he then makes an important statement to the Jews. Pilate does. As the ranking official in the land, he declared what God, more importantly, declared, but God had him do this so they would hear it. He says, I find no guilt in him the first time. I find no guilt in him. You see, Jesus, as the Passover lamb, had to be without blemish. There could be no sin, no moral sin at all in Jesus in order to be the ultimate Passover lamb. And Pilate said, I find no guilt in him. And so Pilate looks for a way out of this situation. I mean, he's in a sticky mess here. And he said, you know, okay, guys, you have this tradition that I let somebody go, some prisoner go. But you see how he wants to get his dig in. But he actually just keeps making things worse for himself. You know, that's just how sin is, right? So you're having an argument with your spouse or, you know, mom, or with your mom, your dad, your child, whatever, you know. And what do? You know, like, you know, we kind of act like, you know, oh, so you meant that, and, you know, when you were angry, you know, right? And that, you know, that's how we do. And we just make it worse. And that's what Pilate's doing here. So he's getting his dig in. And so he says, do you wish then that I release for you the King of the Jews? Yeah, he knew they hated that. And you know, so he was asking for them to say no. And they chose Barabbas instead, a man who John here says is a robber. We find out later he's also a murderer. He was an insurrectionist. He was one who wanted to overthrow the government. So he had apparently killed people. And note the irony here. The religious leaders wanted to release a murderer back into the population so that they could murder Jesus. Isn't that amazing? Incredible. Third, Jesus is rejected by unbelieving Jews and Gentiles. He's rejected. So what happens is you pull all that together. We talked about the first point, the Jews, you know, and their despising of Jesus and the Gentiles of finding him irrelevant. And then God pulls them together here in the story, in history. And he shows that Jews and Gentiles both Jesus is rejected by unbelieving Jews and Gentiles. Chapter 19, verses 1 through 16. Let's look at those verses. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. Let that sink in a minute. There's a couple of real solemn statements that John makes. This is the first here. Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers wove a crown of thorns, and they put it on his head, and they arrayed him in a purple robe, and they began to come up to him and say, Hail, King of the Jews, and to give him blows in the face. And Pilate came out again and said to them, Behold, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him. And Jesus therefore came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, Behold, the man. When therefore the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify! Crucify! Pilate said to them, Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him. The Jews answered him, We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God. When Pilate therefore heard this statement, he was more afraid. And he entered into the praetorium again, and he said to Jesus, Where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, You do not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you, and I have authority to crucify you? And Jesus answered, You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me up to you has the greater sin. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard these words, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, Behold your king. They therefore cried out, Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him! And Pilate said to them, Shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, We have no king but Caesar. So he then delivered him to them to be crucified. Let that sink in. Just a straightforward statement. He delivered him to be crucified. So, unsuccessful in getting the Jews to go along with letting Jesus go, because he didn't see any reason to kill him. Pilate thinks, okay, let me just have him scourged. Maybe a brutal beating would appease them. Okay, scourging. The Romans, and I'm sorry, this is rough. The Romans had a leather whip. It was made of several straps of leather. And they would put little bits of metal or bone in the ends of it. And it was not administered by one man. And not an ordinary man either. It was administered by several men, and they were soldiers. How long did they beat the person? Until they wore out. Or until their commanding officer finally called them off. Oh my, how cruel, how horrible. And a scourging, okay, yeah, I tell you about the little bits of metal and bone. Can you imagine what that would do to your flesh? Make a pulp out of it. Some people were after they had been scourged like this, their bones were sticking out. They were ripped open. Their insides were torn open so you could see. And a lot of people died from it, as you could imagine. I think, okay, Jesus, you did that for me. You had to do that for me because I sinned against you. Oh, I wish I could remember that when I'm tempted to sin. And remember that it took several soldiers, strong men, and beat him until they wore out. Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus. This beating was designed to weaken a person that was to be crucified. But it was to dehumanize them too. Here, Jesus, who God became man, and Pilate has him beaten to dehumanize him. And then, in just a moment, he's going to make a point of that. According to passages like Isaiah 52, 53, Jesus had to be fully humiliated to take our place, to bear our penalty for sin. He was scourged. He was mocked like a pathetic wannabe king. They put on him a despicable crown of thorns. They put on him a purple robe, trying to make him look silly. Oh yeah, what kind of a king is this? The Roman soldiers mocked him, and as John tells us, they would say, "Hail, King of the Jews," and then slap him in the face. After all that, once again, Pilate brought Jesus out to the Jews and declared a second time that he found no guilt in him. Here, barely recognizable Jesus wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate declared, "Behold the man." Somebody he had just dehumanized. Somebody that we know from Isaiah, he's barely recognizable. You know, forget all the pretty little pictures and everything. Jesus was beat to a pulp. I mean, could you imagine if you took three or four soldiers today and give them that kind of a torture instrument and let them beat you till they finally were worn out? What you would look like? That's what Jesus looked like. And then they tried to make him look silly on top of that. I mean, he's barely alive at this point. What a sight Jesus was. And they're thinking, what kind of king is this? Bloody, barely alive, dressed like a cartoon king. But I want you, brothers and sisters, to remember this, that in his suffering and death, he manifested the glory of God as at no other time. And I don't want us to just camp there. We need to think about the reality of it. But we need to think of the greater reality of it. That in this, as Jesus is standing before them, just beaten and bleeding, and he looks horrible, and they're making him look silly, that his beauty, his glory, and his majesty were beaming at that time. And that's how we need to see it. Yes, grieve over your sin that required that. But then make your mind go to the point of it all, to glorify Him. When you think of that humiliation, think, oh, what a Savior. Oh, what a great King. Because He triumphed over my sin. My sin. I know my sin. And all of the sins of all of the redeemed of all of the ages. He bore them. And we're not to the cross yet, but He's already started His suffering. And His scourging is a part of it, as Isaiah tells us. So yes, grieve, but don't stop there. Glorify. Now, part of this, Pilate hoped to embarrass them. You know, here is your pathetic King. You know, can you do no better than this? I mean, look at this guy. It wasn't enough for the Jews. They wanted to heap more shame on Him. Now, that was God's plan because God still had something even more dreadful but more wonderful to accomplish on the cross. But the Jews, it wasn't enough. Beat this guy to a pulp. He's probably going to die in a matter of time anyway after that beating. And they're not satisfied. And so Pilate is still resisting crucifying Jesus. He declares a third time now, I find no guilt in Him. But they're not going to give up. The religious leaders won't quit. They're not going to take a chance of Jesus going free here. And so they say, according to our law, He has to die. He broke the law against blasphemy. He called Himself. You see, here is another tactic they're using to get Pilate to do their bidding. He called Himself the Son of God. Made Himself out to be the Son of God. Now, in the pagan religions that Pilate grew up with, he knew the superstitions, the myths and all about the pagan gods and how they would sometimes take on human form and walk among people. When Pilate heard this, he's shaking in his boots. He's like, oh my. What if this is one of the gods? And remember, he's a pagan. And I just had him beat. And so he's afraid. So he asked Jesus, where are you from? And Jesus wouldn't answer him. Why? Well, first of all, we're told in Isaiah that he would not answer. Like a sheep that's led before his shearers and all. He would not answer. Because if he had said, I am God, okay, that's it. You go free. Sorry, Jews. I'm not going any further with this. Sorry, Jesus. Yeah. But then what would have happened to us? No Savior. No payment for sin. No life. Jesus was not willing to stop short of saving us. And so he kept his mouth shut, like a lamb that's led to the slaughter. And Pilate is irritated by Jesus' silence. And so he says, don't you know that I've got the authority? Here he's strutting around again. I have the authority to let you go or to crucify you. And Jesus, as one commentator said, Jesus here, the prisoner, becomes the judge. He says, you only have authority because somebody above you gave it to you. And Jesus isn't thinking of Caesar. He's thinking of God, the one to whom Jews and Gentiles, Pilate and Caiaphas, are guilty and accountable. And Jesus says, yeah, you're accountable. But there's somebody who even has a greater sin, the one who delivered me to you, probably thinking of Caiaphas, the high priest. He has the greater sin. So Pilate is greatly troubled here, and he's again trying to let Jesus go. And so the Jews employed a new tactic. If you let Jesus go free, then you're no friend to Caesar, Pilate. We're going to tell on you. We're going to say that here's this man who wanted to overthrow Caesar, and you let him go. And Tiberius was a paranoid man at this time. And Pilate heard that, and he's like, yeah. So he's caught between doing what is right and doing what will save his neck. And sadly for Pilate, he chose the latter. It's Friday, Passover proper. But that day was also the day for preparing for Passover week. Sometimes that whole week, Passover plus the week, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, is just referred to as Passover, and that confuses some people the way the gospel writers talk about it. But this is the day to prepare for that Feast of Unleavened Bread. And in order to irk them one more time, Pilate brings Jesus out and says, "Behold your king." And they respond, "Crucify him. Take him away." And he gets a dig in a little further. He pushes the knife in a little more. "Shall I crucify your king?" Because he knew they hated that. And then more of the irony here. How do they respond? "We have no king but Caesar." These guys are lying through their teeth. They hated the Romans. They hated Caesar. They hated Pilate. But they'll side with Caesar and say, "We have no king but Caesar," because they hated the Lord of glory so much. "We have no king but Caesar." How right they were. By rejecting God's Messiah, they would not have him as king. And you know something? The chief priests at that moment, the rulers of the leaders of Israel, they joined the pagan rulers in Psalm 2 and took their stand against Yahweh and against his anointed king. Isn't that amazing? How many times had they sung Psalm 2 thinking, "Oh, these are Gentiles. Gentile kings who take a stand against Yahweh and his anointed," which is talking about Messiah. And they took their stand against him. Just as Isaiah predicted, Jesus was irrelevant to the Gentiles, Isaiah 53:2. "He has no stately form or majesty that we should be attracted to him. He was despised by Jews," Isaiah 53:3. "He was despised and forsaken of men." John 1:11, "He came to his own, the Jews, and those who were his own did not receive him." Oh, believer, behold your king. Only by faith can you see his glory in his humiliation. Under his crown of thorns, he bore Adam's curse of thorns. He was the spotless Lamb of God, declared three times here to be innocent. And more importantly, God had found him to be innocent. He remained silent when just one little answer could have freed him. But he was determined to save sinners. While he looked so weak and pathetic, even in that moment when, humanly speaking, he was barely alive, he was holding together the whole universe. Colossians 1:17. He was holding together all the molecules of his murderers. Isn't that amazing? Oh, he's not pathetic. He is not weak. By his horrific scourging, we are healed. Isaiah 53:5. We're healed of our deepest disease, which is what? Sin. We find that only in Jesus. And now, at the Lord's Supper, let us remember Jesus and think on these things. If